Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and Associate Director of Research at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund intelligence. I'm joined by Omar El-Tarai, our U.S. Director of Research. Together, we'll share the latest news and trends in the U.S. commercial real estate market. Omar, it's great to be with you. What is on our agenda today?
Yeah, so we'll start this episode off with the macro update, touching on some inflation, housing, construction, and GDP releases. Then we'll touch briefly on the markets, what's been moving the markets, and some of the recent earnings that have been coming out. And then finally, we'll dive into some CRE-related reports and specifically some CRE-related earnings results.
Excellent. How about you get us kicked off?
Yeah, sounds good. So last week's Fed announcement and rate decision was really not all that exciting and somewhat of a non-event. As the Fed continued to hold rates where they are, this was really in line with the market's expectations going into the announcement. One thing that I thought was notable was in the official statement and the accompanying press conference, Fed Chair Powell described the overall economy and labor markets as solid. I think he said solid five times total, but that seemed to be his word of choice and really gave little guidance for timing and magnitude of cuts going forward. But a big part of what's factoring into that hold decision has to do with inflation. And we saw an inflation metric release late last week. So still sticky inflation really continues to drive this wait and see narrative that has been in the market for a while now. So in the BEA's personal income and outlays release for December, which came out late last week, the core PCE measure of inflation increased 0.2% month on month, or was up 2.8% year on year, still well above the Fed's target range of around 2%. But coupled with consumer expenditures data was also the real disposable personal income, which is up 2.4% year on year, or advanced another 0.1% on the month through December. The way that you can think about this is that if income is keeping up with inflation, it may serve as a potential support for additional spending and continued consumption that can ultimately cope with and continue to drive inflation up. So this PCE read was not super positive, given that inflation is still quite sticky, and the PCE numbers join the inflation metrics, notably the producer price index as well as consumer price index, which are still well above the target range. And it's showing that inflation is very much still in the system and really felt throughout the economy. This hard data also accompanies and validates some of the survey data that comes out of the University of Michigan. And so on January 24th, they released a survey report of long-run consumer expectations for inflation. And this really revealed that consumers are still expecting inflation to stick around for a while. So the median long-run expectation for inflation is around 3.2%. But one thing that was noted in the report was that this high inflation reading is also really coupled with a higher level of uncertainty and dispersion amongst the respondents, particularly surrounding the potential policy changes. So even though the median reflects this kind of higher for longer inflation expectation, that does mask some of the dispersion or differing opinions that the survey did capture. But a big place that inflation has been felt is homes. And I know we got some new home data that you dove into. What'd you find there?
Yeah, you know, before I dig in, I think it's worth mentioning that there are really two or more reasons that I think the Fed likes the personal consumption expenditures price index as a measure of inflation more than CPI. And one is those substitution impacts, right? If a particular good becomes too expensive, they account for substitution effects. But the second is its treatment of housing. So there, most people who rent only see that inflation of rents once a year. And folks who own homes, right, they lock in a mortgage rate at one point, and so they don't actually see that housing inflation, or it's treated as a good thing because you want appreciation. So all that is to say, homes, very, very, and housing, very, very big impacts to the overall inflation picture. So I'd say the one big data piece we got this time was new home sales. This came in on January 27th. It's a Census Bureau data point. We got this for December 2024. New single family home sales came in just under 700,000 at a seasonally adjusted annual rate. That was 3.6% above November's revised rate of 674,000 and 6.7% year on year. The report also showed, since this was the December release, the end of the year, that an estimated 683,000 new homes were sold throughout 2024. And that was actually up 2.5% over 2023. So I think there's a couple things to note here. There's limited existing home inventory due to elevated mortgage rates. And we're experiencing some major affordability challenges here in the United States. And I think these are bolstering a lot of multifamily demand. More would-be buyers remain renters. And while you did see some modest growth in new home sales, there's some cracks showing here. Builders are facing slimmer profit margins. There's a lot of ongoing labor and material cost pressures. I think you just alluded to some of that when talking about expectations for inflation. And these could really can further constrain supply and keep markets tight for rentals. There were some regional breakouts. And I think this will relate back to what I was talking about a few minutes ago. Median home prices are 12% less than the national median sales price in the Midwest. And it continues to experience some of the highest new home sales, 40.3% from a year ago versus 6.7% up nationally. So the Northeast saw new home sales jump 25.9% year on year. And the median home price was actually 91% higher than the national median home price. So I think these are going to be front and center. These market dynamics are going to be front and center as we head into 2025. There's going to be a lot of policy and regulatory shifts. Again, adding uncertainty to financing and construction costs. And I think this is not just going to impact residential, but commercial as well. And on that note, we did get another piece of data this week, also from the Census Bureau. And that's from their Value of Construction Put in Place survey. So we get an idea of construction spending. This covers new construction in addition to improvements on existing structures. This data comes out monthly. The release showed that just under $2.1 trillion in construction spending was in December at a seasonally adjusted annual rate. That's up 0.5% on the month and 4.3% on the year. That was split between $950 billion in residential and $1.25 trillion in non-residential. It was also split $500 billion in public spending versus $1.69 trillion in private spending. So I want to zoom in here a little bit. Private non-residential spending came in at around $750 billion. That was up on the month 0.1% and up on the year 2.3%. That's similar to the annual growth figure that we received for November, but that is the lowest since August 2021. And it's actually been declining, or the annual figure has been declining since December 2022. I think it's driven by a few key sectors. One that I want to highlight is manufacturing. Before the pandemic, about 15% of private non-residential construction spending was in the manufacturing sector. Now, at least in December, that was double at 31.5%. It slipped from its recent highs. I think that's some of that CHIPS Act and IRA spending wearing off for some of those incentives. But I think there's also a decent amount of uncertainty about what the domestic demand for manufacturing really looks like, what's going to happen with tariffs. So could be some interesting movement there in the next few months. And then one last thing on construction spending, there is a breakout for data center construction spending. They've tracked this since 2014. That spending is still accelerating around $32.5 billion at a seasonally adjusted annual rate. That's up nearly 50% on the year, and it's more than tripled since 2020. So can that sector keep this up? I think we will have to see. There's been a lot of recent developments in AI and quantum computing that I think leave a lot of questions about how much computing power is needed to train some of these models. Is quantum computing on the near horizon? Are we going to need as much real estate to do this work? So I think there's a lot of looming questions and a lot of shakeups that have happened in the last just couple weeks even. Could be interesting to see where spending goes. So that was some of that construction data from the census, but there was one last big release in the past few days here, and that was the advance estimate of fourth quarter GDP. So this comes from the Bureau of Economic Analysis. They reported that GDP increased at an annual rate of 2.3%, and that was down from the 3.1% they saw in the third quarter. So this is primarily driven by growth in consumer and government spending. This was despite a decline in investment, while a reduction in imports actually helped boost the overall figure. So a lot of this was buoyed by a big surge in consumer spending, 4.2% on the year. And I think this masks some challenges for commercial real estate. If you look at the figures, non-residential fixed investment dropped 2.2%. That was the first decline in over 3 years. Business equipment spending fell 7.8%. Outlays for structures slipped for the second consecutive quarter. And so as residential investment stabilizes a bit, there are some mixed signals here. Elevated borrowing costs could still compel property owners and developers to navigate a really tough capital environment. So before I keep talking too much, Omar, how about you shed some light on what's been happening with the markets, what some of this uncertainty is driving there?
Yeah, so over the last week, and we're recording this end of day on Tuesday, the 4th of February, the yield on the 10-year Treasury really was little changed and remained in the 4.5% range. But shares of equities, U.S. equities, were also little changed despite some market disruption at the start of the week, really surrounding tariff talks, which pulled certain sectors down by about 1 to 2% on Monday's trading session. The CBOE Volatility Index, or the VIX, popped up to about a level of 19, which is about 3 points over the level of 16 that it was at in the prior week. So a little bit of uncertainty there, but overall, the yield curve, as we're starting the second month of the new year, remains normally sloped and albeit a bit flat, but overall, kind of a better look for the credit markets. Credit spreads remain tight. The spreads between BBB and the 10-year U.S. Treasury, right around 95 basis points, which is historically tight, but I think driving some of the optimism that you've seen in capital markets. And the 30-year mortgage rate is still approaching 7%, which this is up 35 basis points from mid-December and about a full percentage point from September 2024's low. So overall, the market is trying to really digest a lot of information. Still remains quite positive, but I think is still reacting to not only the Fed decision, potential policy changes, but we're also in the midst of earnings season. So as of recording on February 4th, about 200 of the S&P 500 companies have reported, representing over 50 total market cap. Nearly half of those who have reported their Q4 and full year 2024 results have reported beats on both revenue and earnings expectations, with 63% beating on revenue expectations and a larger 75% beating earnings expectations. In the earnings season, if you look at not only the individual companies and kind of overall sector stats of who's beating and who's missing, I think it's an important kind of consideration to look at the price action that comes out after the results. So across all sectors, if the price movements of the shares following the release of the results showed that for companies that beat on both revenue and earnings expectations saw share price appreciation of 2% on average, while those that missed on both revenue and earnings fell by 3.5% on average. So the way that I interpret this is that the market is punishing misses more than they are rewarding beats. Across all sectors and the earnings, and looking into 2025 and beyond, earnings are expected to grow by 12% on average through 2025 and 13% through 2026. These are really led by utilities, communications, and information technology, which are all expected to grow in 2025 around 20%, while energy, materials, and consumer staples have lower expected growth and really are expected to see earnings contract through 2025. And given that this is a real estate focused call, real estate as a sector is expected to see earnings growth in through 2025 of about 5%, so much more modest. But as we're talking about earnings, I know the kind of first big group sector that does report earlier is financials, and a big portion of financials is banks. And Cole, I know you were listening to a number of banks' earnings calls. What were you hearing in those calls?
Yeah, so like you said, the big banks are usually the first in the wave of earnings calls. So we got these a couple of weeks ago. But what I've done is I've stripped out the pieces of each of their earnings calls that related to commercial real estate. And so we'll focus on the big four banks and what they were talking about. The first is JP Morgan. Very limited commentary on real estate, but they did say that their CRE loan portfolio was flat. New originations were actually offset by paydowns. There was a little bit more commentary on Bank of America's call. They said the commercial loans overall grew 5% year over year, which included actually an 8% drop in commercial real estate loans. So if you were to take their commercial loan book, excluding CRE, it actually grew 7% year over year. They also mentioned they took losses of $359 million, which was down from the third quarter, and that was driven by continued decline in commercial real estate office losses. Now, the one call that definitely has the most about CRE in it, if for no other reason than they probably are the single largest bank holder of mortgages for CRE, is Wells Fargo. So they said the commercial net loan charge-offs increased $80 million to 30 basis points, driven by their commercial real estate office portfolio. And they said commercial real estate office fundamentals have not changed and remain weak. They said they expected office losses to be fairly lumpy. They're working actively with some of their clients. They said non-performing assets declined from the third quarter, and a lot of this was due to a $390 million decline in CRE office non-accrual loans. Now, talking about allowance, so their allowance coverage for corporate and investment banking and commercial real estate office portfolio increased 12%. They said CRE revenue decreased about a percentage point from a year ago, and this has been offset by some of their capital market revenues from commercial mortgage-backed securities. Real estate syndications, multifamily capital, they're expecting to increase a little bit as the market sentiment improves. One last point from Wells Fargo, they said that average loans declined about 6% from a year ago, and they said that this was driven, again, by continued reductions in their CRE portfolio, mostly driven by office. So Omar, anything about asset management or REITs?
Yes, we'd start with the asset managers that have reported. There've been a common theme that I guess as the banks are pulling back, the asset managers are certainly getting excited and getting ready to deploy capital. And that came out in a number of the earnings calls, starting it off with a January 23rd call from Cohen & Steers. Their CEO shared that they view that the private CRE valuations have troughed, and they are expecting an uneven recovery across property types. This was followed by the Blackstone call on January 30th, in which you heard an echo of the recovery really being underway. And the company noted that they deployed $25 billion into real estate through 2024, which was up 70% year on year. And then a third asset manager to report results and have some commentary on commercial real estate was Franklin Resources, which on their call, they noted that they really see quite a few different ways of playing the real estate recovery, notably through secondaries, real estate equity, and real estate debt. But they really view that the current market environment is favorable for negotiating terms and covenants. And so they're really starting to gear up and deploy into CRE. And another thing that Franklin Resources call, or that the management team noted on the call, was that they do see an evolution of different products targeting the private markets, which should open up really the accessibility of private market CRE. And that's something that they view as an opportunity to really grow their business and drive positive results. But outside of the broad kind of asset managers, a few REITs have reported. We will do a deeper dive into the REIT earnings results on one of our future podcasts. But just wanted to give some kind of like high level stats for where we stand. So within listed real estate, which if you include mortgage REITs, equity REITs, and then the brokerages, about 16% of market cap have reported. So we're still waiting on quite a few earnings calls over the next couple of weeks. But some notable kind of top or headline results have been that Equity Residential, Prologis, and Weyerhaeuser all topped earnings estimates. So reported stronger than expected results. Then Blackstone and two home construction companies, D.R. Horton and Pulte Group, also posted positive results, beating on the revenue side. And then there were a few misses, including BXP and Alexandria Real Estate Equities, which missed on earnings. But while the REITs and companies continue to report, I know that sentiment and outlook is still something that everybody's trying to piece together for the year ahead. What were you hearing from the CREFC Board of Governors survey?
Yeah, so as we kind of round out our discussion of CRE capital trends here, one of the things I wanted to talk about on the podcast was the CREFC Board of Governors surveys. While we mentioned it before, for those of you who are not super familiar with the CRE Finance Council, it's a trade org that's mainly focused on the CRE debt space. Specifically the securitization market, but a lot of discussions and a lot of stakeholders in all parts of the capital stack. But they have conducted a survey since 2017. The aim is to gauge their board of governors on quarter-to-quarter market shifts, looking at current conditions and future outlooks. And so the fourth quarter survey actually reached a record 126.6. That was up 5% from the third quarter, which showed 121.1. 42% of respondents said they expect improved economic performance in the next 12 months. That was up from 32 who said the same in quarter three. 74% anticipate a positive impact from government actions on CRE finance. And that rose super sharply, up 17% on the quarter. In addition, expectations for improving CRE fundamentals jumped to 65%, up from 40%, and only 12% forecast worsening conditions compared to 23 who said so in the third quarter. So overall, positive sentiment increased to 77%, no negative responses. So I think overall, there's a couple of things I would take away. CRE finance market is at least as far as the Board of Governors and CREFC are concerned, I think it's in a good spot as we make our way through 2025. They have a lot of optimism despite the kind of coalescence around a higher for longer interest rate environment. They believe that asset prices are stabilizing, and a lot of the conversation here, I think, really debt drives equity. And so they expect that transaction volumes will rise and they expect robust demand for CRE financing. So a lot of positivity in the survey. I'll be interested to see what happens in their quarter one survey after we get perhaps a little bit more clarity on some of the policy and regulatory front. But Omar, as we go through the next few weeks, there's a lot more earnings calls. As we go to next week, I think there's a few that folks might want to pay attention to. On Tuesday, February 11th, we have Curbline and Brixmor and Triple Net REIT for those interested in retail calls. On February 12th, you have Urban Edge, Agree Realty. You have a few office REITs, WP Carey, Highwoods. On Thursday, the 13th, you've got Iron Mountain, Stag Industrial, Federal Realty. And on Friday, a few office REITs as well, Piedmont Office Realty Trust and Office Properties Income. So that's earnings calls next week. It's going to be busy. What about data releases?
Yeah, so in terms of data releases, we'll start the week off, or the first ones we're looking at is the NFIB Small Business Optimism Index. That's on Tuesday, the 11th. And then on Wednesday and Thursday, we get CPI and then PPI, so some inflation data. And finally, we'll close the week out with retail sales, business inventories, and industrial production coming out on Friday.
Excellent. Looking forward to all those. Omar, I think that's all the time we have today. But before we sign off, I do want to encourage listeners, if you like the show, if you could rate it on your preferred podcast platform, give us 5 stars, leave us a comment. We will read them. Or feel free to just send us an email at altusresearch@altusgroup.com. We'd like to know what topics you'd like covered on the program. In the meantime, Omar, it's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking with you on another episode of CRE Exchange. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.